Welcome to the OME Talks podcast. I'm your host, David Petro. This is the second of two OME 2025 preview episodes where we talk about the featured and keynote speakers from this year's upcoming annual conference in Oshawa. In this episode, we're going to be hearing from featured speakers and keynote speakers from day two of the conference. So let's start with our featured speakers, and we're going to begin with Vanessa Vicaria. All right, so I'm talking with Vanessa Vicaria. Vanessa, how are you doing?
Great. Thank you for asking.
So I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Oh, wow. Just coming in hot. Okay. What can I tell you? I am a math therapist, which means that my main focus is helping heal math trauma. So whether that's working with teachers to help their students heal math trauma or working one-on-one with students to help them rebuild their relationships with math, that's what I spend most of my time doing in the math ed world.
Okay. And you are one of our featured speakers for OME 2025. And I think you're going to be doing some math therapy with us as my guest. So can you tell us what you're going to be talking about this year?
Well, yes. So what I'm going to be talking about this year is the idea of, I guess, embracing failure by redefining success. So one of the biggest contributors to why students have such like fraught relationships with math is because of the way we define success, not only in math class, quite frankly, but in our schools. You know, it sets up this real binary between what it means to be a good student and a bad student. And that really connects to a student's self of worth. You know, when they feel like they're a bad student at school, they kind of feel like they're a bad person. And that digs really, really deep. So I'm going to be talking about how not only can we, you know, we talk a lot about helping our students be okay with mistakes and failing. We're going to go a lot deeper and talk about how to really help every single student redefine success in a way that is meaningful and healthy for them so they can take the risks needed in math class to meaningfully engage with the content and to begin to like love it.
So can you think of a specific example of a student that you've dealt with that you've been able to sort of redefine what success means for them?
Mm-hmm. You know, just a few weeks ago, I was working with a student who had like a really big exam coming up, and she was just so stressed. She's always had a really negative relationship with math. And for her, that's because she's always getting around the 50s. That's in her mind. She's like, well, no matter what I do, I'm not a good math student, you know, and at this point, she was really at risk of failing her exam. So I saw her the day before her exam, and she was so upset and so panicked. And she actually knew a lot of the content. And I think we see this with a lot of our students. She just couldn't access it because she was in such an anxious state. So when students are in that state of anxiety, when they're in one of the trauma responses, you know, she was really in like freeze mode, which is one of the four trauma responses. She kept just drawing blank every time we would do a practice question. So I asked her, we did a session where we decided to redefine what success on the exam would look like. So in her mind, it was like, if I fail, like it's the end of the world. That's the only measure of success. And we came up with a success matrix, which is what I'll be doing in my session, of what other things might qualify as success. What else would feel really good to her? So she came up with things like, well, I'll feel really good if I know I try my best, or I'll feel really good if I answer a question that I couldn't have answered at the beginning of the year. I'll feel really good if it feels like I've progressed or grown at all. So we fill out this chart. There's a whole other, you know, bunch of other components to it, but it allowed her to kind of like breathe a sigh of relief and say, okay, the only measure of whether or not me trying is worth it is not if I get a 90. There are a whole bunch of other things on this list that I can feel really, really good about. And that allowed her access to the content. She started opening up when we did the practice questions, and she didn't fail her exam. So bonus.
All right. So now, do you find it is easier to convince students or teachers how to redefine what success is?
It's definitely, in my experience, easier to convince teachers. I think we have a lot of work to do because kids call BS and they're not wrong, right? Like I think teachers really want their kids to feel successful any way they can. And I think teachers believe that all kids can feel successful and can build better relationships with math and can progress with math. But we are working within a system that tells students that the way to be successful is to get a good mark. And the reason you need a good mark is because you'll have no future if you don't get one. And So us teachers doing all this hard work, we're working in inside of a culture and a system that continually tells students that. So they're getting their messaging from everywhere, but also they're not entirely wrong, right? Because if you want to get into a university program, you often do need a specific mark. So I think kids are a little more like, okay, that's a really nice theory, but we kind of like are calling your bluff on this a bit. And part of what we need to really try to do as teachers, and I'm consistently working on this because it's hard, is not only help them redefine success, but actually like not be all toxic positivity about it. You know, like, yeah, it does suck if you don't get the mark you want and don't get into a university program you want, but what are your other options? What does that mean? How can I convince my student that it's not the end of the world and they don't need to be panicked about this one thing to their detriment all year?
All right. So we look forward to hearing you and seeing you tell us about how to redefine success for us in our math classes. Vanessa, thanks for talking to us today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Vanessa Vicaria talking about embracing failure by redefining success. Our second featured speaker of the day is Joe Bowler. So I'm speaking with Joe Bowler. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay, thank you.
And you are talking to us from the West Coast. Joe, can you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Yes, I can. So my name's Joe Bowler. I'm a professor at Stanford, professor of mathematics education, co-founder of U-Cubed, which is our website that shares lots of free resources, lessons, and videos and other things. Also co-founder of Strugly, which is a new online maths tool for kids learning maths. And my latest book is called Mathish.
Ah, and that's a great segue to what we're going to be talking about today. You are one of our featured speakers. Welcome back to OME. And I think your session is about your new book on Mathish. So can you tell me what Mathish is?
Well, the idea of ish, I can tell you, is just a new way, really, of thinking about estimation. Because there is a lot of research I'm finding showing that when kids estimate, they estimate numbers, they do better all through school. But what I know is kids hate to estimate. And when we ask them to estimate, they're like, why would I do that? And what I realized was we can tell kids that we can think about ish numbers, because out there in the world, we use ish numbers all the time. Like, you know, what time is the party? How tall is the building? How much rain are we going to get there? We answer all of these questions with ish numbers. And what I've found is kids love ish numbers. They hate to estimate, but they love ish numbers. And so it just is very helpful before kids calculate. It keeps them thinking conceptually. So if they were adding two fractions, for example, instead of getting lost in numerators and denominators and coming out with outlandish answers, just asking them first, what's the ish answer? What would we think it is, ish? And kids become more free. They're not as worried about sharing answers. So that's the ish idea, but there's lots of other ideas in the book, even though it's called Mathish.
So I really like that idea of just reframing the idea of estimation. And I too see that sometimes students, when you ask them to estimate, they're afraid of being wrong. And, you know, when we are asking them to estimate, we're not asking them to be right. We're just asking them to, like, tell me what you think.
I think it may be that they think, oh, another mathematical method. Why am I doing that?
Well, you know, as teachers, all we want to do, math teachers, is we just want to, you know, get kids to, you know, complain about things. And so we're good at that. But so when you're talking about math-ish, do you talk about it differently if you're talking about, say, students who are in sort of the younger grades versus, say, in a high school?
No, not at all. In fact, there is research that shows that just getting kids to ish where a number is on a number line, so if we go to the young grades, really helps them build number sense much more than doing like precise things with numbers. But up in the high school years, we can also think about asking kids, oh, you're going to plot that function on a graph. What do you think it would look like before they get into the detail plotting and numbers? And what that does is it draws kids' brains back into a more a space that's more about sort of big picture thinking instead of precision. And it turns out that it's really helpful for their understanding. So it definitely goes across all of the grades.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when we're looking at strategies to implement for teachers, you know, anything that we can use from the primaries all the way to the secondaries, you know, that it just builds on itself and it becomes part of the right. culture of mathematics.
Mm-hmm. And it's so easy to do. I have teachers who have now started asking kids for ish numbers, and they say it's just completely transformed the culture of their classroom, and more kids are joining in, kids who used to be afraid of math. So I know it's really helpful for teachers if there's something easy to implement.
Okay, so we look forward to hearing from you in May-ish.
In May, yes.
At OME 2025. Thanks for giving us a little bit of insight of what you're going to be talking about. Check out Math-ish yes. at OME 2025. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
That was Joe Bowler talking about ish numbers. Next up is our keynote. Nat Banting has moved up from a featured speaker to keynote this year, and so let's hear what he's going to be talking about. Okay, so I'm speaking with Nat Banting. Nat, how are you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Good, good, good. So Nat, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, so my name is Nat Banting. I am a high school mathematics teacher in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada. So, I mean, I just got back from the building. We're on the last day of classes before our final assessment. So I am living the teaching life full time and then picking up all the little interesting nooks and crannies of the profession as I go along. So sometimes that means I'm lecturing on university campuses. I do a little bit of that. Less so as my family, as my kids get a little bit older, I have less and less time for other things, but also try to engage as much as I can through writing projects and other things in the field and speaking projects like OME.
All right. So Matt, you are going to be one of our keynote speakers this year at OME 2025. And I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about your keynote session.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's kind of a fun thing for me, especially coming into 2025, because I have now a pretty long history with OAME going back, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years kind of attending, making the flight out from Saskatchewan as a session presenter and then as a featured speaker a couple times and now as the keynote. So it does feel like sort of a coming of age for me and my ideas and everything that I've gained from Ontario and the great teachers there. I think the keynote is sort of like that. It's sort of like my evolution as a teacher that OME played a big role in, which maybe people would find surprising as a teacher from Saskatchewan, finding so much influence from OAME. And we have similar professional organizations out west, but OAME always has been such an active voice in professional development. So as a young teacher, I sort of gravitated towards such a large organization and started noticing these messages that would come out of Ontario and slowly but surely filter their way west. And so there was very much, I mean, some people would claim that Toronto is the center of the universe. I'm not sure my Western friends would like me saying that. I would contend that Toronto is the center of the hockey universe, but I'm not sure about math ed. But we would notice these messages coming from the East out West, the dominant one being this idea that we are going to be going back to basics. So I noticed very early on as a teacher that the profession seemed to be in a perpetual state of crisis. And I didn't really know why. I kind of had my classroom, I had my four walls and my students, and I was happy and just kind of overworked and trying to get those next lessons off the ground. And everyone kept talking about how we need to go back to basics. We need to go back to basics. And then a lot of the people I was talking to kind of on the more ambitious side of math education took this sort of as an insult. And over the last few years, I started wondering about the question, like, what if we do need to go back to basics? Because no one ever tells you what those basics are. They just say we have to go back to them. And so I started sort of playing around this idea of what if I had to have a basic that would describe my daily lessons in my math classroom? What would that be? Why is it productive? And how can we start, you know, remaking our mathematical experience for our young learners based around the basics? I know what the basics are kind of in the media and when the slogan is thrown around, but the keynote is sort of like not a sarcastic, but a tongue-in-cheek look at the phrase, let's go back to basics, in which I present what I would feel is the basic of all mathematics teaching and learning, which I will keep secret for now. And I guess you have to come to see what I believe that is, and you can agree to disagree with me, and then show you how that lives in my room and how it has led to productive mathematical opportunities for my students.
So you've already killed my follow-up question as to what your basic is.
Okay.
But that's okay. That's okay. So, you know, when you I mean, you're basically alluding to what I guess you would call the math wars, I think.
Sure. Yeah. That's been one of the names kind of that popularizes this. And it's sort of seeped out of, like, math wars used to be, I think, like a phrase that was reserved for like the upper echelons, I guess, of the academia. Like this was talked about on university campuses and in newspapers and the media, but it really lives out kind of sort of cloak and dagger in our classrooms every day, in our conversations with colleagues and parents and things like that. So while that I think is more of like a capital M, capital W math wars, it really is kind of at the very heart of you know, how we live as math teachers on a daily basis.
So when you think about, you know, how you live as a math teacher on a daily basis, how you interact with your students, you know, how does this idea of, and you know, without giving away your secret as to what your basic is.
Right. Try to keep the lead buried a little bit. Right. Yeah.
How do you attain that sort of feel in your classroom?
Yeah. I think one of the most beautiful things and lucky things that I have in my career is I cannot pull myself out of the classroom. There have been opportunities at the academic level and in other things and more of a private professional development spheres to be like, well, maybe I'll try something different than classroom teaching and kind of use my experience there, but I can't leave. I can't leave the kids. I love it too much. I love, you know, the feeling of a school, and it's kind of all I've ever known professionally. And it gives me this idea that I don't have the luxury to be pie in the sky. I don't have the luxury to kind of talk without a pragmatic sense to everything that I, you know, that I believe theoretically, because I'm there every single day. And so when I think of this, and hopefully people who attend the session and the keynote get this idea, is this is built by work with students. And so whereas math wars, when you talk about that, it feels like two sides, none of which have, you know, seem to give any middle ground or seem to admit they have anything in common. And I just don't think teachers can afford that, because we're on the, you know, on the front lines every single day. So instead of that, it's sort of like just an honest approach to, that's great, this theory is telling me this, this theory is telling me this, this research has this conclusion, this research has this conclusion. We can fight on the internet all day, but I have 33 pairs of eyes looking at me at 9 a.m. and I need to decide what the best way is to provide a productive a mathematical experience for them. And so sifting through all that, I've arrived at one thing that I'm going to call the basic. And from there, I'm going to build my practice around it.
So as you say, you stare at those 33 pairs of eyes every day. Do you think that somehow gives you a little bit more credence in what you're saying? I mean, you are living it every day, like some other people may not be.
You know, that's always a thing, right? You learn that pretty early in the profession. Like I'm not close to the end yet, but I'm not close to the beginning. I'm kind of in those middle years, the dog days of the profession. And I think you learn pretty quick that a lot of people like to tell you how to teach. And I'm hopefully, when I speak to groups of teachers, as I've been incredibly privileged to do, people get the sense immediately that I'm not telling you how to teach. I'm telling you what I found productive and how I teach. And so there is like this inherent humility that comes along all these messages, because, you know, I've met those classes and those students, and I've had opportunities to make those, you know, excuses like, yeah, but that won't work with my kids. And yeah, but what about this, that, and the other? And so I'm not doing anything else other than saying, hey, this is what I've seen. This is why I believe it's true. Here's the theory it's based in. But again, yeah, we're shoulder to shoulder trying to do in this sort of every day. So I would like to think that people don't think I'm casting down, you know, some type of dictum from a mountaintop. I really am kind of, you know, day by day refining what it means to have student act mathematically in my room.
I feel like if there's any more Canadian and maybe Canadian Plains attitude, I think that's it right there.
Yeah, right. We'll do it in, you know, 40 below if we have to.
There you go. Now, one last question. This is more of a selfish question for me. I'm, you know, when you look at doing a keynote versus a featured or a breakout session, how does that work into the way that you build your session up?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think about that quite often, because I'm a teacher. I don't keynote. Right. Like the day that the teacher has doesn't involve a lot of, you know, this transmissive sort of, here's some things that I want to share with you. So as much as I do, you know, a workshop or a session be much more interactive, and I want to make it feel like school. I'm a firm believer that you can tell someone something, but until they feel it, they won't believe it. And so when you get teachers for 1 hour I need to make them feel something, right? And a lot of the feelings that come out of math class aren't entirely positive. And so when you get a group of math teachers, you're already preaching to the choir, but you need to make them feel some kind of way about their learning experience. So then they have this kind of ethical imperative to sort of replicate that with their students. Keynote, I think, is a little bit trickier, but I like a lot of energy. I like to bring in pieces from my students. I think that my biggest inspiration, like obviously these ideas come from working with them and their ideas, but also students are funny and students do interesting things, not only mathematically, but like just like as they encounter these new scenarios, because a lot of times in my room, what I ask them to do is different than what they've had, you know, been asked to do in other math teachers' rooms. And so even just bringing those kind of reactions into the keynote, keeping it interactive as much as you can, but it does move away from kind of the structure of the classroom, which I find a little bit tricky to kind of make that feeling be authentic to the classroom at the same time. So my keynote at OAME, I always try to have, you know, student examples and quotes and work and exemplars and all these things from within like, you know, 3 weeks of when they occurred. And I think I have a captive audience of hundreds of students that are in my room every day. So I try to look for moments that illustrate these points, which I think make it resonate with teachers even more in that keynote format. But I guess the idea would be to make it feel like school, make it feel like class, right? And if you can create that feeling, maybe we can slowly implement these ideas and create like incremental change.
Okay, so we look forward to hearing about your students in May in Oshawa at OME 2025. Nat, thanks for talking to us today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
That was Nat Banting giving us a hint about his, quote, basic. To hear what that actually is, you'll have to register for the conference. Registration is open now, and you can do so at our MCIS registration site. The link is in the description. We'll see you there in May in Oshawa. Next month, we'll have our yearly bonus episode where we compile the answers to the common question that we ask all of our season's guests. What advice would you give your first-year teacher self? So stay tuned for that, and in the meantime, stay safe.